Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Homicide is the leading cause of death for African-American men aged 15 to 34. It's the third leading cause for all men in the U.S., according to the Centers for Disease Control. Now, you may ask, why isn't that figure from the Justice Department? The CDC is responsible for health. Well, violent death is, of course, the ultimate health failure. And there is increasing momentum for a decades-old movement to treat it like a contagion, an epidemic, no different from any other that ravages a population. Gary Slutkin is a physician and infectious disease control specialist at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He's also founder and executive director of Cure Violence, a nonprofit that aims to stop violence using strategies from the public health playbook. 30 cities are using the program with a mix of private and government funding. And Dr. Slutkin now joins us from the studios of WBEZ in Chicago. Welcome.
Thank you, Robin.
And make your comparison of violence to a contagious disease.
Violence fits the definition of disease, and it fits the definition of contagious. The dictionary definition of disease is that it has characteristic signs and symptoms, and that it causes morbidity and mortality, meaning that it can cause injuries or dysfunction or death. And the definition of contagious simply means that it causes more of itself.
Well, let me give you an example that we are hearing about. That, for instance, when a victim arrives in the hospital of a gunshot wound, for instance, a victim of violence, the staff knows that that means more violence is likely to occur, that there's going to be retribution, that there's going to be more of that violence, and that that victim in particular, maybe it's not immediate, but as many as 45% of people who go to the hospital after violent injury return within 5 years shot or stabbed again.
Right. This is exactly the way that many contagious diseases behave, as well as even non-contagious diseases if they're incompletely treated. If you get a person who has tuberculosis and he's in the hospital and he's treated and he isn't continuously maintained on what is required, he will relapse. Likewise for asthma or for diabetes. The only difference about a contagious problem is not only will that person relapse, but that there will be additional events in the community, additional tuberculosis events, additional flu events, in this case, additional violent events. You know, people call that retaliation, but really these are just the contagious nature of it.
So let's start with what the thinking is, if that's the theory. You send someone out to intervene immediately, as you would if you knew that somebody had a viral condition that would lead to an outbreak.
Well, in the first instance, you want to prevent a case of tuberculosis or flu or of violence. So in the first instance, violence interrupters as part of the cure violence model are out to prevent anything from happening by seeing early signs. For example, finding out what happened at a party or who's upset or who might be planning something. And these are like SARS or bird flu workers who are looking for first cases or to prevent first cases. But if there is a first case, someone was shot and we fail to prevent that case and that person is in the hospital, we not only talk with that person and then continue with him to ensure that should he live, that he not relapse. And that's by staying with him for 6 months to 2 years, modifying his thinking, his ways of responding in the future. And additionally, we're interacting with his friends and those who might be preparing to do other events so that the contagion is actually stopped right there. So then the hospital, as you've mentioned, is not going to have a horrible Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday that would have been, in a way, the last event.
Why isn't this police work? Detectives are supposed to go and meet with people who might be their friends, their contacts. Why is this medical work?
It's public health. And the way that public health works is that you have health workers. And health workers are the ones who have the access to people whose behaviors you want to help change. So we have sex workers reaching sex workers. If you're talking about HIV, AIDS, you're talking about moms who are reaching moms for breastfeeding or nutrition, refugees reaching refugees in various situations, possibly related to cholera or tuberculosis. And here you have people who used to be involved in violent behavior now helping to access the people who are doing it or thinking about doing it. So this is a basic, essential public health technology. I mean, this is the same thing in Ebola. I mean, they tried police responses to Ebola and it spread. It wasn't until there were health workers who could talk to people, but why not to, you know, touch the person who is sick, how to bury safely. These are very difficult behaviors. All these behaviors that we work with in health, violent behavior, sexual behavior, hand washing or sanitation behavior, very difficult behaviors to change. Violence, by the way, is not one of the harder behaviors to change.
Really?
Smoking behavior is much harder, and sexual behavior is much harder. The difficulty we're having in the realm of violent behavior really relates to the public's understanding of it, because it's still being mischaracterized as some kind of a moralistic problem rather than a scientific health-based problem. And we used to do this with other issues in health, too. The problem of violence is being misunderstood the way that we initially misunderstood AIDS. When AIDS first came in, we were judging these people, and it was all a moral problem. And the people who spoke about it were like religious leaders or political leaders, and then gradually got to have health people talking about it. And people saw, yes, it's actually a health problem. Because historically, we used to think that people with plague or leprosy were bad people, and we blamed them. And we're still struggling with the idea that people who have problems with substance abuse have, in fact, a health problem. So we've moralized a lot of things, including this. This is a health problem. It's an epidemic health problem, needs health workers.
Well, but let's take up that question I'm sure many are asking. There in Chicago, first of all, do you think this is working? Because on the face
Chicago
of it—
Chicago is the absolute proof of this.
How so?
Because it was what is being seen right at this moment in Chicago is the discontinuation of the cure violence approach in Chicago, which is called ceasefire there. But cure violence was discontinued in March of 2015 as a result of the state not having a budget. Cure violence went from 14 communities to one. Now, what about the one community where it has continued? In that community, the violence has continued to go down.
So you're saying that in 2015, the murders were already rising. There were 480, the most in Chicago since 97. But it jumped up to 762 in 2016. You draw a direct connection to these cure violence programs being cut because of budgets. But in the one community where the one program was left, the murder rate continued to decline?
Yes. This is described in a two-page summary and in a 20-page detailed report on when it happened and where it happened, and also all of the background here, because in addition, I mean, this doesn't happen out of the blue. There have been three published and four external independent evaluations of Cure Violence's work in Chicago, one done by the Justice Department, showing 100% drop in retaliations in five communities and 40 to 70% drops in shootings and killings. And there have been two other studies in Chicago. And twice before in Chicago, when funds were interrupted, it went up. And as soon as the funds were returned, it came down. Now, other cities are not having this kind of start-stop experience. I mean, New York City has had this in the budget since 2009. Los Angeles has an adaptation since 2006 that we helped set up. And there's about 25 cities using cure violence or some adaptation or replication of it.
Well, but these workers who work with the victims of violence, we understand part of what they do is try to help them get jobs, housing, stay with them to try to help them do the things that social workers do, it sounds like. But you also mentioned talking to friends to make sure you try to block that spread of the virus of violence. What about things like guns? You're still working with people who are still unable to leave this community.
Violence prevention, interruption, the work with the individual people is done by these new types of workers, interrupters, outreach workers, hospital responders, who not only have this special access, but they are very, very highly trained in how to cool someone down, how to buy some time, and how to shift their thinking, and then with time to give them new skills. So it isn't really about just a job or housing or all these other things, which are big problems and which we also try to help people with.
So you're not going to get rid of the guns, but you're somehow going to convince someone, don't feel you have to get revenge on that last shooting. It sounds like it's more along those lines. Don't pick up the gun.
But it isn't just don't do it. It's like helping the person cool down and helping them see the situation differently. And then, likewise, the particular behavior of violence can be shifted in spite of the conditions. Similarly, we've dropped rates of diarrheal disease. We've dropped malaria disease, even though the mosquitoes are all over the place. This is the specificity, power, and impact of public health in doing behavior change and in preventing the spread of epidemic processes.
Fascinating. That's Gary Slutkin, a physician and infectious disease control specialist at the University of Illinois at Chicago, but also founder, executive director of Cure Violence, the nonprofit that we'll link you to at hereandnow.org. Dr. Slutkin, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.